Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fly in the Lab. My name is Maria, and I am a scientist, PhD student, science communicator, and host of this podcast. Fly in the Lab is a place so we can all chat and laugh about our science confessions and lab mishaps. A place so we can dispel myths about scientists and really share some of the humour that gets us through the day-to-day struggles, of which there are many. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope you enjoy listening to Fly in the Lab. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Fly in the Lab. Happy New Year. It is 2022. We have left behind the disaster that was 2021, and we're moving forwards, we're moving onwards, we're moving upwards. It's going to be a great year. So, how have you all been? Have you all had a nice Christmas, New Year? I hope you have. I hope it's been nice and restful and you're all feeling rejuvenated and ready to take on the new year as best as you can anyway, you know. I'm sure you're all feeling a little bit worse for wear after maybe some of the partying that we've been missing out on for the last couple of years. But I myself am back to work now. I've been back at work for 2 weeks when I'm recording this little intro. And it's very much back to work with a bang, shall we say. I am starting the final year of my PhD, and if I sound stressed, it's because I am stressed. It's all kind of systems go at the minute. I'm making a plan of the things that I need to get done before I finish my final year. I'm deciding when I want to aim for getting my thesis done, when I want to aim for getting everything handed in, submitted. Oh, it's just the biggest stress at the minute. I think I'm developing a really unattractive eye twitch that just won't go away, and it's all a thing. But it was nice to have a bit of time off over Christmas and New Year and just not think about work for a bit. I was really feeling quite tense and stressed out before Christmas, and for all I'm feeling quite stressed and tense now, it's not too bad, you know. Well, no, it is, that's a lie, it is bad, but you know, I'm going to get through it. Well, I have to. I don't have an option. I have to get this finished. So it's going to be fine. But yeah, I'm just waffling now, aren't I? I'm going to stop. I'm going to dive into the episode because this is a really good episode. And actually, it was really nice to edit this in between doing some of my work this last week. And I had the pleasure of talking to the lovely Laura Taylor. I won't go too much into what we talked about because, well, you're going to listen to it hopefully, but we had a lovely, lovely chat where I was able to reminisce of my days as a trainee biomedical scientist, where I worked in a pathology lab in a hospital, and Laura also works in a path lab, so we were able to have a little bit of chat about that and just really kind of cover some like nice familiar topics, disgusting topics all the same. Like, we did discuss a lot of boobs, balls and colons, but you know, it is what it is. Hopefully it's going to make for some interesting content. So without further ado, guys, let's get into it. Enjoy. Welcome back, everybody, to Fly in the Lab. Thank you again for joining me. And this week I have the pleasure of speaking to the lovely Laura Taylor. Laura, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Hi, so my name is Laura. Thank you for having me. I'm dead excited.
Oh, I'm glad.
I'm so looking forward to it, actually. Like, it's, oh yeah, great. But yeah, so like, my name's Laura. You might know me on Instagram from Teching on Science. I did my undergrad in biomedical science. I then did a master's in biochemistry and molecular biology, where I like looked at cancer. And after doing that, I did a technician internship, which lasted a year. And then last year in September, I started my current role, which is as a medical laboratory assistant in a histopathology laboratory. So in histo, we get all of the bits that's removed from the body, like tiny bits of skin to appendixes to full colons. They come to us. We sort of dissect them, have a look at them under the microscope and see what's making the person feel unwell. So that's sort of like what I'm doing at the minute and sort of how I came to this place that I am today.
Awesome. So yeah, I think as soon as I sort of was thinking about guests to get on the podcast, I thought that you'd probably be a really good one, because we've spoken before, I did a year in a histo lab as part of my placement. So I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I did a placement year as part of my biomedical science degree.
and I also worked in histology. So I felt like we'd have a little bit of common ground here that we could kind of talk about. And I think, you know, it's good to have biomedical scientists on here and kind of talk a little bit more about their jobs and their role, because it is something that's just not really very known about. And that's something that I think I became aware of when I was doing my degree, because I didn't know what a biomedical scientist was. Like, I knew that I wanted to study sort of biomedicine, but I didn't know actually what the role was. And you really are kind of the unsung heroes of the hospital. And I guess that is because you're kind of hidden in the lab all day. I mean, I don't know kind of what you think about that. I mean, maybe your roles have been kind of amplified a little bit more during COVID, and obviously with the work that you do on Instagram, like you're doing amazingly well with kind of getting the word out there about your role and what it is that sort of MLAs and BMSs do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how you kind of feel about that, but
oh, definitely. I also, like, every now and then I forget that you did a year in histo, and then every time I'm reminded, I just love it. And I'm like, yes, like, someone actually knows. But yeah, like, it definitely felt like, so for me personally, as someone who loved science, I also loved history. So applying to university, it was like, I want to be a museum curator or I want to be a doctor. And those are my two things. And I wasn't going to be a museum curator. There weren't that many jobs. So I was like, you know what? I'll go down medicine route. Because it was the only sort of thing for people who liked science. It was like, oh, doctor, that's it. So I applied for that and I didn't get in. Like, I didn't get the grades for it on my A-levels. So absolutely fell into biomedical science. And I always say this exact phrase of, it is the best mistake to ever happen to me, because like, I love lab work, like I absolutely loved it. And again, falling into this role, it was sort of something that I was considering with a pandemic. I initially thought I wanted to go into a PhD and was like not able to get a role, like a project or anything. And I was like, let's have a look at that degree that I spent 3 years working towards. What can I do with that? And it was like, right, it was accredited. So I would need to like do some extra things to sort of become a biomedical scientist one day. But I was like, let's get entry, let's get an MLA role and sort of see where it comes from there. But like, yeah, I try really hard. And I think it hit a nerve like sort of recently with, you know, I got quite a few followers when I did like a reel about not getting into medicine and getting into biomed instead. And I had quite a lot of messages like, we never got told about any careers other than medicine. So thank you so much for being like, biomed's an option and here are all the things. And I think especially with like talking about during the pandemic and things like that, like we sort of are really not, sort of people don't consider it as frontline, but we are like classed as frontline because we're like, we see people from across the hospital, so there's all that risk and stuff, but also like without us the samples just wouldn't happen. So it's something like 94% of clinical pathways rely on pathology, and just that's such a huge amount. Like most people know it'll go for like a blood test, or they'll have their tonsils out, or you know, something like that. So we are like a massive sort of part of the NHS and part of hospitals, and I don't think that many people sort of know we're there. So I'm all for bigging up what we do and what people across like pathology in the UK do, so very, very happy about that.
Definitely. And I think it's such, I mean, obviously I am a little bit biased, but I think it is such an interesting role, and like, you know, there's so many different things that you can do with it, because it's not just histology. You know, you've got people who work in microbiology, immunology, biochemistry, virology, hematology, like everything that you can kind of think of, where you are getting something tested in a hospital, whether it be, as you said, like something from an operation or bloods, that all goes to your team. And that's just not spoken about. I think people just assume that, oh, you know, a doctor comes and takes your blood, they must look at it down a microscope or something. And that's just not the case. Like if you weren't there, then, you know, the hospital would kind of cease to just work.
Literally. Like, so I was in a really fortunate position where I also do like the social media for the pathology department at the hospital I work in. Yeah. And I was just like, take me on a tour of blood science, please. I want to see what you guys do, because it's so yeah, different to what we do. And then I'm like, show me biochem and show me transfusion. And then like point of care testing, where they literally like, we are the people who, if someone's sort of like needing a rapid COVID test on board, we're the people that organize that, or like diabetes dipstick tests, things like that, we're the people who do that. And it's just such a wide range of people, and it's literally like such an integral part of the whole team. And it's just, yeah, like I love biomed, obviously biased, but like,
yeah,
you really do see something different every day, and it's so varied.
No, you absolutely do. And I think people just really don't appreciate that anything that is being diagnosed comes through you guys first, you know, whether it be cancer, some sort of blood disorder, bone disorder, that it all comes through you. And some of the specimens that you see are, they range from kind of standard appendixes, whichever one it is.
I'm not even going to try.
All the way through to, you know, like, as you said, like colons. I mean, something that always sticks in my head is I remember vividly the day that I saw a mega colon for the first time. And I was just like, sorry, what? Hide a person.
Honestly, like, I will be standing there while they're opening them to like fix them, and I'll just be there like, that doesn't fit in my body. Yeah. That doesn't fit in there. What do you mean that's all just scrunched up? And they'll be telling me about all the different disorders, and I'll literally just be there and looking from them, and my gaze will slowly go down to my belly and just be like, are you guys all okay in there? Like, you're ticking along just like. Yeah, I was literally like, I don't know if this is a thing. I'm assuming this is a thing across all hospitals, but we are a bunch of hypochondriacs in our lab, because just there like, I know a million things that this could be. And it's like, you just ate too fast, Laura, chill out.
Oh yeah, I think that comes with any sort of science background, to be honest. Because I think especially, I was talking to somebody who I do a PhD with the other day, and he was saying when he first started his PhD, he like convinced himself that he had the illness that he's researching and had to go to like therapy about it. And I was like, mate, same. Like, I get that.
Oh my god.
That. On like a daily basis, I convince myself that I've got Parkinson's. Honestly, it's like,
I fully get it. Like, every time I'm on a request card and I read symptoms, I'm like, yeah, got those. What do I need to do about it? Yeah. Should I be on this table?
But as well, like, I think you see some, aside from kind of like organs and stuff like that, you do see some like random things as well. Like, I remember seeing like implants that people had, like breast, sort of, what's the word that I'm looking for, like breast enlargement surgeries, and you'd get, you know, a mastectomy, and there would be like an implant in there, and you'd be having a look at that, and like, I'd never seen that before, and I thought that was really interesting. Sometimes you get like a breast that had like a piercing still in the nipple. I'm trying to think of, I saw like an IUD in a cervix once, right.
I was like, that, I literally was like, what is that? And they were like, it's like the coil. And I was just like, like, I've never seen a breast of a piercing in there. Like, oh my god, I just assumed you'd have to take it out. But just keep that as a little treat to yourself.
Like, yeah, yeah. And then like, this is gonna be such like an episode of like, I saw this. I remember we had there was a case of, oh, I can never say this right, necrotizing fasciitis. Is that how you say
right.
it? That flesh-eating disease. And it was like somebody's, actually I'm not going to say where on the body it was because that might be identifiable, but it was a part of the patient's body, and obviously the skin had to be removed because it's a flesh-eating disease. And so you have to like remove, this is for obviously not you, for the listeners, the flesh has to be removed kind of around the disease, and this particular piece of flesh had a tattoo on it. And I remember this like piece of skin came through and it had this like intact tattoo, and I was like, that's mad, like, so cool.
I'd just be there like, oh, the money they've spent on that time. I honestly love it, and I love that I can speak to someone about it, because my partner hates it, because I will just over dinner. Will literally just be like, babe, there was this like ovarian cyst today, and it was the size of at least a jellyfish, and he was just like, Laura, we're currently eating spaghetti bolognese, but whatever, tell me about this cyst. And I'm just like, well, it had this, and he was like, I'm joking, like, please stop talking. And I just think it's so interesting. Like, I never fail to be amazed. Like, we had a gallbladder recently, and it was really large. And I was like, oh, I bet that was painful. And like, the stones inside it were it was like that sort of like molded to each other, the form. So there was one which was like a little rectangle with a little like divot in it, and the other one just slotted into that. And then the other one was like a little ball balancing on top of the gallstones inside. And I was like, the human body is wild.
So
like,
it wild.
Is crazy.
It's funny when you say about like speaking to your partner about it, because I lived at home when I was doing my placement, and I'd be exactly the same. I'd be coming home and like talking at the dinner table about whatever I'd seen that day. And I remember coming home once and saying to my brother and my dad, I was like, you must check your balls. You really must, because I'd seen an epididymal cyst. And I was like, this could happen to you. You need to be feeling. And they were like, Maria, please stop.
It was literally like, it got to the point where I would text my mum and I'd text my dad about the different things I'd seen. And they would like, literally just about checking yourself and stuff. And the my mum would text back like, you had a mastectomy in today by any chance? Give this away. Make sure you check in.
Oh, I love it. It's great. Oh, honestly, I could talk about this all day, but I'm aware that we're like 15 minutes in and we just keep chatting about this. So I'm going to swiftly move on, but we will circle back to this because one of the confessions is about pathology. And I'm going to introduce the poll of the week. So I picked this one because I thought this is probably not something that you would do in terms of testing, but I have definitely done this and I'll explain why in a minute. So the poll of the week is, have you ever dropped a sample on the floor and used it instead of binning it? Do you want to have a guess of which way the results swung?
Oh, I think it's definitely more people have than haven't. Yeah. We are a clumsy group of people, our scientists. So definitely, I'd say like, what, like at least 70 must have said yes.
70%. Oh, okay, right. So they're not quite as bad as what you might think. It is more towards yes, but only just. So it's almost a split. 53% said yes and 47% said no. So we are a clumsy bunch, but maybe we own up to our mistakes. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my God. I feel like I defo did that at uni.
Well, I was going to say when I've done this is actually when I was in pathology. So we are circling back sooner than I thought we were. When I was doing my placement, I mainly did the role of an MLA. And one of my roles was something called like discard. So this is obviously for people listening. And discard was where you threw out all of the samples and the tissues after a set number of days or a period of time, kind of after the investigations with that particular patient were all over and done with. And for some, it was like a month, others it was a bit longer, but you would do discard for whatever day it was that everything was due to get thrown out. And I was doing it one day and I just completely missed the bucket and all of the tissues just went all over the floor. And I was like, oh, like I'll never forget just the dull like thud of like breasts just hitting the floor. And I was like, yes. Oh.
Oh my God. Yeah, I literally did that today. I love it. It sounds so professional when you call it discard, because we call it chuck out.
Oh, do you?
So just like, that's what we call it. And honestly, like there was one time where I was like almost like feeding a colon into the bucket, like you would push like a hose pipe, and I was just there like, this goes on forever and it feels horrible. So I'm so glad that I'm not doing dissection for a good few years, because I was just like, this feels grim.
I think like you never really know kind of what tissues feel like, and I always would have like a bit of a feel while I was doing it, and like, oh, like what does this kind of feel like, and like what does the inside of like a gallbladder feel like. It was always, I don't know, it was just quite an interesting job. And as you say, like you'd throw out some weird and wonderful things. I mean, those like implants have obviously got to go somewhere and they'd eventually go in the bin. And then something that I think not many people are kind of aware of is that when you'd kind of finish discard and you were all done with that, everything would get bagged up. And obviously it's still part of the human body. So it would actually all go down to the mortuary. So I would wander down to the mortuary every like couple of weeks with my bags of discard. And I always found that really interesting as well. Like, it's not like, it sounds really bad, like having a mooch about the mortuary, but like, I think it's just such a sort of like mysterious place that nobody really talks about. And sort of going down there, I was always like, this is actually like, it kind of hit home at that point. Like what an important job working in pathology and like as a BMS or like within sort of like the biosciences is at that point. I was like, this is actually a really important role.
Oh, definitely. And I also would say, if anyone's listening who wants to do a series about postmortems, Mooch Around the Mortuary is a fantastic name. But yeah, like we've never gone there because our clinical waste just gets like taken by porters. But it's always like when I started, and like I think everyone sort of like heard this story from me at one point, but like I was scribing for a mastectomy and it said on it that it was palliative. And I looked at the the person, and it was like she was the same age as my mum. And I just got like really upset. Like I started crying. I'm a massive crybaby, but like I just started bawling and just said to someone else, I was like, can you please scribe for this person? I'm going. And I went at the silent filing room and had a good sob. And I was just like, what on earth is wrong with me? And my supervisor, bless her, she came and found me. She was like, I've been looking everywhere for you. Are you okay? And I was just like, no. I was like, it sucks, doesn't it? Like it sucks. It's terrible. And she was just like, but think about it. Like, so this person, it might be palliative, but she might not have to come in for scans anymore. So you can spend more time for family until it does happen, like that sort of thing. And she was like, and also think about it. How many have you seen that aren't palliative, and how many, you know, people have you impacted and that we've all impacted in this lab through this job? And it proper like was such an eye-opener to me, the amount of things that we see, which isn't, obviously it's quite a negative thing most of the time, but a lot of the times it's nothing. And it was just like such an eye-opener to me to be like, this is, it's people. So it was, yeah, that was not great, but definitely something that I'd like try to think about now, is just that it's the amount of people that are getting helped.
But I think that's really good. I mean, how many people can honestly say that their everyday job massively impacts and helps people in that way? Like, not many. And I think, you know, you're only human for having that sort of reaction. You know, I'm sure there's plenty more people. I mean, I did as well. There's plenty of people who will have been in that situation. I think what always hit it home for me is when we got product of conceptions. Like, your reaction is totally justified, and you know, it just shows how much you care about what you do and how much you care about the patients, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's all about the patients, and you know, like, you're doing a fantastic job for them. And it's, yeah, I think it's a really important thing to like know about the job. And I think once you've hit that point as well, is when you know that what you're doing is worthwhile, and you know, if anything's going to get you out of bed to work in the morning, then hopefully it will be that.
Yeah, do you know what's good, like, just to bring the mood back up, is when it's like, you know, when you like, you have to write down all the names of the products of conception that you get, when you recognize a name from that list who's then given birth, and you've got their placenta from their birth that's been successful. Like, literally nothing makes me happier, and I'm just like, I'm so happy that that's managed to happen for that person. So yeah, that's an enjoyable bit.
That is a very good point. Thank you for raising it with that. I think we need to inject some like happiness back into this. So I'm going to ask you at this point, it doesn't have to be pathology related, it can be like uni related, undergrad degree, master's degree, whatever you want to relate it to. Do you have any confessions that you'd like to get off your chest? You know, this is a place where we share our confessions and laugh about the mishaps, so this is your time to shine.
Do you know what, I honestly don't think that I have any confessions, which is really sad. Like, I have embarrassing stories, and I definitely have other people that I know who tried to hide things. Like, we had this water bath when we were doing cell culture during my master's, and at one point it was just like the way that my supervisor described it was like, it looks like pond water, like it's grim. And I was just there like, lovely, we have all, and so all of our like cells were getting contaminated, and we were just like, what's happening? So we all like cleaned it, we were all doing proper good stuff, and then like at one point one of the other academics, like one of the senior academics who was supervising students in the lab, just like quietly stopped mentioning it, and my supervisor were like, oh, I wonder who it is that could have made the water bath look like pond scum then. And I was just like, knew it were you, like, blamed all of us. It's like, I hate that. I was like, don't try and like get all of us lot to say that it was us. No, absolutely not. Sneaky academic.
I mean, it does happen to the best of us though. Like, I can kind of sympathize, because even now, like, I mean, I know that I'm not sort of like a PI, but I do supervise some undergraduates, and I do stupid things still. Like, just last week I did something ridiculous, so you know, I kind of sympathize, but at the same time, yeah, like, you've got to own up to it. And like, I think sometimes as well, like, it's good to own up to it, and that's why I really like speaking to people on this podcast, because I think it's nice to just show that we are just human and we do stupid things, and you know, we drop things, we spill things, we break things. It's just the way that it goes.
Always at the worst times as well. Like, when I was a technician, we had a student practical where they were doing all of the like the pre stuff, and then we were going to run the qPCR for them. Just so it wasn't like taking ages. And the literally the thing that they always said to you about QPC, I was like, can't make any bubbles. That needs to be still as out. And like me over here goes and taps it on the side, goes taps my plate and gets loads of bubbles everywhere. After we'd spent ages doing stuff, and these were student samples, and I was just there like, can we rerun this? Like, please say there's enough sample left, because if not, like, these students ain't got no, like, this, it was, I just was like, you literally said the one thing not to do in this is to make bubbles, and I'm just gonna, like, bash it on the side, like, it's no.
I hate QPCRs yeah. As well. Like, QPCRs are so temperamental. Like, you can have one teeny tiny weeny little bubble, and it just throws everything off. Honestly, it's such a dirty name at my house right now, like, QPCR. Blech. We don't want to talk about
them. They are like my least favorite of all the things. No, I hate them. They're the worst. Like, I will like take anyone on in this. QPCRs is the worst scientific technique just ever.
I feel like you've got trash. people I mean I agree, you've got people in two camps. You've got people who hate QPCR and are like, this is the worst thing ever, and then you've got people who are like, no, Western blots. And to the Western blot people, I'm like, sit yourself down and let me give you like the 5,000 reasons why I hate QPCR. It's not,
oh
the
my
one.
God, yeah.
And it's one of the biggest parts of my PhD, so I am having a great time right now.
I'm gonna say, but that is enjoyable.
I'm loving life. Can you not tell by the like massive black bags and like tear stained face?
Oh no. Oh, I'm so sorry.
But no, I think, you know, it's okay to confess to these things and say as well, say that you hate something. Like, I'm loud and proud about things that I hate. But anyway, I think we will move on to the first confession. So as I said this before we started the call, and I said, as soon as I saw this confession, I knew that I had to save it for Laura. And I think this is actually before we'd even kind of said that we were going to do the podcast episode together. But I was like, no, I know who this is going to be perfect for. So I've had it earmarked. So here's the confession. I did an internship in a pathology lab. On my first day, I saw someone dissecting a colon. I didn't think I was that squeamish, but the next thing I knew, I was lying on the floor surrounded by worried faces. I didn't turn up for my second day and never told the lab that I wasn't coming back in. I sometimes wonder if they questioned where I'd gone.
No way! Oh my God. As if they just didn't go back. Oh my God. Wow. I mean, I would completely understand. Colons are a mess, man. Like, they're huge. As if they just stopped turning up and just were like, yeah, I'm just gonna not tell them. Like, oh my God.
I mean, you know,
that's so funny.
I feel like, especially on your first day, like, you don't know what to expect. Like, I certainly didn't know what to expect. And you're right, like, the first time I saw a colon, I was like, what the hell is that? So, you know, like, even if you did pass out, I feel like that's totally normal, surely. And like, I don't even think it's that embarrassing. Like, you hit the deck, you
absolutely
get back up,
not.
It's fine.
Like, I've never had anyone like faint at this job, because we are all so casual now about like getting like genuine crap on us. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, we're just like, oh, lab coats, what's this? Probably some cyst, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah,
we're also used to that.
People don't realize, like, when you get, you know, like colons in, you do have to clean the poo out of them before you have a look at them.
God.
It's not a case of like, you get it and it's fresh and it's pink and it's lovely. They stink. They're full of crap. Like,
literally, like, you have to, it's so bad. And like, so this guy that I work with, he's always like, I notice that you run away whenever I'm opening colons. And I'm like, that's incorrect, but you have to deal with it smelled. Like, if I want to do that in future, that's on me. But right now, absolutely not. But like, we fainted. So we had a practical at Unicut that was affectionately named Bloodfest. And it was like, we had the capillary tubes and we were like trying to like get the full ones. And back in the day, they used to try and get us to fill a full Eppendorf tube with blood. And I was like, that ain't happening. So we all had to like stab ourselves and stuff. But it was called Bloodfest because guaranteed every single year someone would faint in it. And this last fainted, oh my God, like, she fainted when it was like our year. And like, the technicians like gathered around her and like put her legs up on a box while she was on the floor. And we had this lovely lecturer who would always ask us every morning, have you had breakfast? And every afternoon practical, have you had lunch? And he was just stood over her, like, literally stood over, hands on hips, like, did you have breakfast? And I was like, mate, not the time. This isn't it ever. Like, what do you think? She's on the floor.
No,
and I remember then doing that practical. literally on the floor with her legs up, just coming round, and it's like, have you had your breakfast? And it's like, oh my God. And just doing that as a technician, like moving up from student and doing that as a technician, we would have to have meetings about which one of us was going to take the staff credit card to go to Morrison's and buy chocolate biscuits.
I was
to like stop people from being.
I was literally about to say this. So like, I was laughing there and I was like, yeah, not the time, dude. Like, why would you say that? And then I cast my mind back to one of my first labs that I was teaching at the start of kind of like this first semester. So it'll have been like October, September time. And it was a first year lab and it was first thing in the morning. So I knew that they'd have been out the night before, most of them. I was like, it started at 9. I was like, you're going to be coming into this absolutely minging. It's a tiny lab. We were using Bunsen burners. I was like, the chances of somebody not fainting are honestly slimmer than what they are if somebody does faint. And I said that at the start. I was like, okay, guys, like, welcome to like medical laboratory number one. Can I just ask if you all had something to eat? Because, and I was thinking, I was like, I am that guy. I am that lecturer, because that's what I said. And I was like, oh, like, you know, if you want to just like nip out and like get something from the vending machine and then just like come back. Oh no, that's awful. Because I did say that.
I love it. Do you know what though? I absolutely love it, because like the exact same thing, I used to love, like hate them when I was a student, but then when I was a technician, the Thursday 9 a.m. practicals that we were on, I would look around and look to see who had like glitter or face paint left on their like cells from night before, or people still in eyeliner, and I'd just be like, did you have a good time last night? Here's your lab session today. Hope you enjoy.
Yeah. You can pick them out from a mile off. And sometimes you get them turning up in like last night's outfit and you're like, that's not proper lab attire, my friend. But it's when you were saying about the blood lab, I had to lead a blood lab the other day. And I must admit, I was having kittens beforehand, because I'm not really very good in like situations where people either vomit or pass out. I get very stressed out. And I realized when I was sort of like prepping for this lab and I was really nervous, I was like, I'm in charge of this lab. If somebody passes out, that's on me. Like, I'm the responsible adult. I have to deal with them. And I was like, oh no. So beforehand, when I was kind of doing the briefing, I was like, so guys, you know, like, we're going to be doing a blood lab today, and like, you're going to be pricking your fingers and taking blood. If you don't like blood, just look away. Don't make yourself do it. I'm not going to force you to do it. And I was just like, please don't pass out. And I was sort of making a bit of a joke about it, like, oh, you know, haha, like, I don't want to have to pick you up from the floor. But inside I was like, no, I'm deadly serious, like, do not pass out on me.
It's that moment when you look around for an adult and then realize you're the adult and you're like, I have to deal with this.
I was like, I'm not prepared. Nobody prepared me for this sort of level of authority. I don't want it. Have it back. Oh, it's not ideal. But I think you're right when you're saying about like your colleagues, and they're all just like so used to it now, you know, like,
oh god, yeah,
it's especially if you work in histology,
it's horrific. Like, oh definitely, like, I just have like casual conversations with my mum and dad about it, and I'm just like, saw this today, and they're just like, why are you so chill about it? And I was like, because I was literally elbow deep in parts earlier doing shook out. Like, of course, I was trying to think of a really nice way to put it, and I was like, no, that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, parts. Yeah.
It's a big old mix of stuff. Like, I was like, my wife scraped actual poo off a bench today. Like, honestly, I can deal with it. It's fine.
Yeah, you get so blasé about it, but I think it's probably the same for like doctors, nurses, like.
You know, oh, definitely.
They'll see it so often. It's just, it's such a part of everyday life that you won't think about it. I'm really when I put this episode out, I'm looking forward to the feedback that I'm going to get, because I have a feeling people are going to be commenting like, you two are disgusting. Weirdos.
I hope. Yeah, I'm just like, please don't think we're gross, because also like, I completely like give sympathy to everyone who's actually dealing with patients, because I feel like it's definitely a bit easier having a colon than a person who's got like stomach issues, you know what I mean? So like, I am very okay with seeing all the bits after they've been removed and just trying to deal with them as best as I can.
Yeah, the colon's not going to speak back to you really, is it? It's just going to get on with it.
Honestly, this podcast is just going to now be named the Colon Cast. Like,
afterwards I'm going to be listening to it and like picking out all of the, like, because I pick out like key phrases for like the title, and I do feel like it's just going to be like parts, colon, like.
If you were to do like one of those word cloud things, like colon, it'd be massive, and then like body parts is just going to be on the bottom.
Knee deep in.
Knee deep in. She was up to her arms in it. Oh no.
Oh God, it's great. But so obviously, you know, you've got to start off somewhere. And as you said, you did a biomedicine degree. So our next confession is linked to doing a bachelor's degree as well, this time in chemistry, but I'm sure you'll still be able to relate to this issue. So during my bachelor's degree in chemistry, I had a lab partner who I thought was called Anir. And I called her that for 4 years. And I'd like to say as well, just to interject, I asked for voice notes of this person saying it, and they had like a really thick northern accent. So they were like, "Oh, Anir." And I was like, beautiful, amazing.
Love that.
During graduation, her name got called out, and I was surprised to hear Anaïs. Anaïs. I joked with her after that it was funny that they got her name wrong when it's so easy to pronounce. I was mortified when she then turned round and told me that I'd been the one saying it wrong all these years. Anaïs, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
Oh my God. I mean, I feel like we could all relate to this, the fact that it's just the thing where it was, especially with you being a bio, a blog, like,
oh,
blog,
here we that's go.
Sorry, that whole situation, that is just the thing that I just, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh yeah, it'd be really stupid if anyone did this. And I was like, we all did.
Everybody does sorry. It. If you haven't listened to previous episodes, quite a few people in the SciComm community. So I don't think I said at the start, so myself and Laura met on Instagram. And so many people in the SciComm community thought that my name was Abby or Log for the longest time, even though it clearly says on my profile that my name
Abby or Log.
And I still get messages now from people who are like, oh, hi, Abby, like, I've just got this question for you. And then they'll send me a message later like, oh, I didn't realize that your name's Maria. And I'm like, come on.
Oh my God, it's just Abby Urlock. Oh, I know, it's like, yeah, I don't think I've done that with anyone else. I'm so sorry. I feel like I should have sent that confession. You should have got confessions from everyone that just said, well, actually, there's this last I follow on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I thought her name was this. But no, that's so bad. I just imagine though going up to her at the end of graduation and being like, ha ha ha, how silly. And she's just there like, I'm so sorry. But like, it's also, how many times does someone have to get your name wrong before you just accept that's what you call
well,
now?
I was going to say, I feel like I'm too polite, and I might correct them once. And if they still kept getting it wrong, I'd be like, well, this is just my name now. Like, I just have to accept it and move on. So I can kind of see how it's happened. But I mean, I don't know about you, but I had pretty much the same lab partner the whole way through my undergrad degree. I mean, I don't know how it worked for you. Like, did you have kind of various lab partners or?
So in my first year flat, I had, there was a guy who lived there who was my basically lab partner, because we'd walk together. And then we sort of like, he got a girlfriend who was also on biomed. So he was always late then. So I was just like, do you know what? No, like, I'll go find someone else. But at the end of my first year, I started working in the student bar, and so many biomed students were like, working there, or like, we'd all got on the same intake. So
I
was
you're
just
gonna
like,
say going in there, I was like, yeah, fair.
No, I don't. The amount of times I went straight from an exam and went straight there afterwards, like, it was brilliant. But now, like, I then got a partner who was just like with me for the rest of the 2 years, like, pretty much. So like, yeah, I just stuck with that for a bit, because I think it's nice having the same person, because it's like, you just like figure out how to work together and stuff. So that was good that I like managed to meet him, despite the fact that I was on the same course for every year, doing all the same lectures, all the same practicals, and I had no idea who he was until we started working together at the SU.
Yeah, but there's quite big cohorts. I mean, I don't know what it was like for you, but I think there was maybe about 250 biomed students on my course. So there was quite a few of us. I mean, there was only about, it changed because you could do either a 3-year or a 4-year course. So the 4-year was when you did your sandwich year in industry, or, you know, in a hospital lab. Obviously, I did the hospital lab. So it meant that a lot of the people who I'd done like first and second year with then disappeared. And I was then with like the previous year for my final year, which was their third year. So that was really strange, because it was kind of getting used to new people again. And there was only about, I want to say about 50 of us, or maybe 70 in between. who did placements, because they were quite hard to get on. So yeah, that was like something that we had to contend with. So I can totally understand why, you know, you'd meet somebody who you didn't previously know.
See, that's just such big numbers for me. Like we had 80. We had 80 biomed students, but because we also did stuff where, because most of our practicals and lectures overlapped, we also had like biovets, biochems, biology, as most people call it. And then like something else. So like our biggest lectures would be 250 people, but that's everyone under the bio sort of umbrella. Whereas like specific biomed, there'd be like 80 of us, and that would drop off every year when people do placements or just drop out of uni. So yeah, there weren't that many at all, I don't think, by the end. So you got to sort of like know who each other was pretty much.
Right. So what university did you go for your undergrad?
So I went to Lincoln. So I got in there through clearing. And then they sort of like, they mentioned that this placement year or doing a portfolio year was a thing. But I wanted to graduate like as quick as possible because like I wanted, you know, my gran around and stuff. So like I just wanted to just bash through my 3 years. But not many people went. I know like two or three people who went, and I think they both went to GSK for a year.
A lot of places like that, like AstraZeneca and
So that was the only people that I sort of knew.
I guess that makes sense. I was the same, like it was kind of mentioned and I was like, do I really want to do it? And I ended up doing it, and obviously I'm pleased that I did because I got the chance to work in histo. And you mentioned the portfolio there. I mean, do you want to kind of tell people a bit about that? Because I think that's something that people don't know. Because I think a lot of people think that, you know, you go to uni, you do your biomed degree and you come out of it and you're a biomedical scientist. And that's kind of not the case.
Yeah. So if anyone's wanting to do biomedical scientist, please do an accredited degree. It will make things so much easier in the long run, even if you don't want to be a biomedical scientist. So basically, to be a biomedical scientist in the UK, you have to be held to like certain standards. So you need your degree to be accredited by the Institute of Biomedical Science. And that just means that certain modules you have to pass over 40%, and you'll have to do certain modules to be like up to the training standards. And then you also need to do the IBMS portfolio. And that's just like a year long thing where you get trained basically to be a biomedical scientist. And you can do it in a sandwich year at university, but sometimes those places are quite rare. Like my friend was doing his and he was like, there were six places for over 100 students who wanted to do it, so they can be quite rare. Or you can do it sort of afterwards. So what my hopeful route is going to be is just, I've got my foot in an NHS as an MLA, and I'm hoping that if a trainee role comes up where I can do this portfolio, then I can do it that way. And then that means that if a BMS role is available, I can do that. So those are the two things you need, is the accredited degree and the portfolio. Because it's like, I've got someone, there's a lass in the lab now who did chemistry as her degree, and she's now going to university one day a week for, I think it's either 3 years or 4 years, and at the end of that she will have a portfolio and her degree will be accredited. So that is a way of doing it, but she's just like, it's an extra 3 years when I could have just done an accredited degree. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's not something that's spoken about before uni, is
it's
it?
It's not at all, because I remember I went through clearing as well, and I was looking at biomed, and I remember thinking like, do I want accredited, do I not? And I'll be honest, like at the time I didn't actually know what it was, and it was just a complete fluke that I ended up doing an accredited degree, and like obviously it paid off, but like I didn't know the chance. I might not have gone down that route. And yeah, like you said, it can be really difficult, and you know, if you've got to do top-up courses, if sort of like the IBMS decide that your degree isn't suitable, then it takes time, it takes money, and obviously like the trusts have to put you through that. So you know, it is difficult, as you said, to get through that and to do your portfolio. Like if you're dedicated, you can whip through it fairly quickly, but again, it's like the money situation and having a training officer and the actual process of like doing your portfolio. So I did my portfolio as part of my placement year, and I again didn't realize how much has to go into that. It's like a massive folder that I've still got in my cupboard, and where you kind of look at all different aspects of like the lab. You might go into some other labs. It's all talking about like transferable skills, either kind of lab skills or like communication skills as well. So I remember going to some MDTs, which obviously I had no idea what that was either. So that's like, for anybody listening who isn't aware, it's a multidisciplinary team meeting at kind of this whole hospital level. So you'll have like nurses there, doctors there, surgeons there, biomedical staff there. You've got all sorts of people there, all kind of having basically a meeting about how to treat patients and how to like move forward with treating patients. So I went to that. I went to the mortuary, had a tour of the mortuary, had a look at like where they do the postmortems. I like went up into theatre. So there's all sorts that you can do, but it can take a lot of time. Obviously, it's a lot of effort. It takes away from like your everyday job, which is why some hospitals are, as you said, like not so keen to kind of put you through it. But yeah, I just wish that people talked about it more. And like, I think that's why it's really important, like with you and your Instagram, and like you do talk about it and you're very like vocal about kind of the different routes that you can go into it. And something that I jotted down actually in my notes that I was going to ask you at the end, but it fits it quite nicely here, and you've already kind of mentioned that, as I was going to say, like, is that sort of the route that you're looking to go down? And it's nice that you've said that, yeah, you've got a foot in the door now and that's kind of what you're hoping to do. And I think it's really important to kind of show that journey as well, because it's sometimes not always as plain sailing as like doing your degree, getting a placement, finishing your degree, getting a job. And even like, I know people who have got their portfolios, they've got their degrees, and they haven't been able to get like a band 5 BMS position. So it's not even like if you've got everything, you can go straight into it. And I think it's really admirable that, you know, you talk about it and like you're a massive advocate for the different routes that you can go into it.
Definitely. Like, I feel so it's one of them things where I sort of like tried to make the best of any situation that I've been in. So like, not getting into medicine and going into biomed, like you said, complete fluke that Lincoln's accredited, like complete fluke. Cause I just was like, just through my tears of not getting into medicine, I was just there like, I was literally like, I went to Lincoln on a day out once and thought it was really pretty, apply. And that was it. That is how I made my decision. It was it. Not got medicine, it's biomed then. Lincoln's got cathedral, it's quite cute. So that was it. And then, yeah, the portfolio, like, it was just like emailing my tutors from unit, like, and I just said, how do I become a BMS? And they were just like, get an MLA role and see if you can do your portfolio. And I was like, sick, I'll do that. And it's just like, I'm hoping to get that done. But it's just waiting for the time. Like, because at the minute we've got someone just finished in. So when you were on about how beefy the portfolio was, I was just like, he stays after work and does it. And he was like, do you know anything about stats? Because I've got to do stats in this. And I was just like, sorry, what does an ANOVA test have any place in biomed? Like, what's that about? So it was just like a ridiculous amount of stuff that he had to do. So he's like submitted now, I think. So he's just like, fingers crossed, he's passed everything. But that is what I'm wanting to do, especially in the lab at the minute. Because like, so the whole, is it West Yorkshire Association Trust Summit? They're called WIRE. So it's like Leeds, Bradford, York, are moving towards digital pathology, which like I'm mega interested in. I think it's going to be such like a move forward in the NHS, especially like in our area. So I'm really hoping to sort of get something in that, and that'd be something really good to be involved in. But obviously it completely depends on all the funding you can get and if there is any trainee roles available. So I'm just sort of hanging on, and I've never been in a job more than like a year. So I'm just sort of like, you know, leaving uni, doing my master's, doing an internship. They were all like 1 year things. So I'm just like, I just want to try and stick with it, see what I can do with it, like, you know, make the best of any situation, and just hopefully that'll be where it leads one day. Because this was just like complete fluke, just being like dropping on this job. I almost didn't come to my interview for this job, so like, you know, complete fluke. I was in a proper mood. I was throwing a paddy, like literally. I was just like, it was really bad because I was so sick of applying for stuff, because obviously it was COVID. Yeah. And so many of the things that I found was like biomedical science jobs. There was quite a few, but there was no MLA roles. And this is a discussion that I've had actually like at work. There seems to be at the minute an excess of biomedical scientist roles, because we've tried like hiring maternity covers and things like that, and there's not been much interest. But as soon as you put an MLA role up, oh my God, it'll get flooded. Because it's literally like, at the minute, there's loads of people out there who are like, I've got my accredited degree, but I ain't got my portfolio, so I need that foot in the door. But there's no step in between. So you've got loads of empty BMS posts and loads of people waiting to like have that step in between, but there's no one making that step. Sorry, this sounds really like ooh, yes, anarchy, all that sort of thing.
No,
like,
no, it doesn't. No, I get it. And but I think probably the way that, like, you've got to look at it, and I'm not just saying that because, like, obviously we're speaking now, but, like, you know, I know you're saying it's like a foot in the door, but it's not just that. Like, you're gaining skills that other people won't have, and you're seeing how, you know, like, the department works. You're getting very familiar with the jobs, even if you're not specifically doing them. Like, you'll know them inside out anyway. So it's going to be so much easier for you to step into that role than even somebody who's, like, completed the portfolio and they've been out of it for a while. Like, you're going to be so on it that, you know, I really can't see, like, a downside to it. And I have absolutely no doubt that, like, if a job does come up in your department or, like, in a nearby hospital or whatever, like, you definitely get it. Like, I have absolutely no doubt in that, because you're passionate about what you do. You do other things for, like, the department. Like, you were saying, you run the department Instagram. Like, these are all things to shout about. And, you know, you're clearly passionate about what you do. You're good at what you do. It's all good things, you know?
Yeah, it is good. Like, it is a good job. I would say, like, to anyone interested in NHS, to have a look at science jobs, because they are just so interesting. And it's just, like, I love learning. Like, I love learning so much. And I know that sounds proper nerdy, but literally give me, like, a training day, or tell me to go do an online course. Like, I live for that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm just, like, when I started, and then, like, even now, I will literally just be like, can you show me what immunos are, please? And I'll follow them around my little notebook.
Aww,
and be like,
so
what's all this? And then, like, can you show me what this is? Because we don't do cytology, like, in our department as MLAs. And I'm like, can you show me how to do that, like, here? And can you show me what this is? And, like, properly just making notes on the whole, like, because also, even if I don't get a role, I just think it is important to know how everything runs as a thing. Like, so recently I got moved up to a band 3. So those MDTs that you were talking about earlier, I, like, prepare the slides for them and reports and that, and pass them over to the pathologist. And that was just so interesting, because I was like, you can literally see where the patient's done this, we've done that, the surgeons have done that, the doctor's doing that. Like, it's mad how many people concentrate on just one person.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, a massive team effort. And that's why, like I said at the start, it's really important that people do recognise biomedical scientists and everybody in the biomedical science department for, you know, like, the amazing work that they do. Because, you know, without you, you're, like, an integral chain, part of the chain. And if that does break or fall off for whatever reason, then everything just grinds to a halt. So, no, I think it's great. And I think it's brilliant that you're such an advocate for, you know, like, biomedical scientists everywhere. And yeah, no, I think it's great. And I think, so that's all of the questions, but I just wanted to thank you for coming on and, like, you know, talking about what you do and sharing some more of what you do outside of, like, your Instagram to my little audience here on the podcast. And before we kind of end, I just wanted to say, is there anything that you would like to share or, like, promote? So if you want to, like, talk about, I don't know, like, your Instagram, your department's Instagram, definitely shout it out here and I'll pop links in the description. Or if you want to, like, direct anybody to anywhere, then please feel free to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. It's been so nice to, like, meet you in this, little air bracket. It's the first time. Like, so literally, you were one of the first people that I followed. So I was just, like, so excited to, like, come on and be like, oh my God, friends, science friends.
I keep saying this to everybody who I've spoken to. I'm like, I just really feel like we're friends. And then I'm like, I must sound so lame, but, like, I genuinely feel like you're, like, I mean, even now, like, talking, I just feel like you're, like, a friend that I just haven't spoken to for a while and we're having a bit
honestly,
of a catch up.
Literally, like I say, this is my partner all the time. I was like, you know, my friends and, like, this person, and they're like, who is that, your science friends? I was like, no, we're dropping the science. They're just, like, friends. They're not just science friends anymore.
I know.
But yeah, with, I guess, if promoting stuff, like, my handle is Taking on Science, because it was a play on words for taking on science and being in tech. There's a technician and Yorkshire accent, all that good stuff got mashed into that username. So yeah, you can find me there, and I share lots of things that I'm really passionate about, like, through my link trees. Like, there's normally a petition to sign or a link to Dementia Friends sessions, things like that. And then if you want to check out the departmental Twitter and Instagram, it's HDFT Pathology. And yeah, like, I try and put, like, I'm not, it literally is sort of dependent on when I'm free to do that. But I talk about all areas of the pathology department. So that's everything from, like, micro point of care, phlebotomy, transfusion, transplantation, blood science, and biochem. I think that's all of them. So yeah, and I'm also on Twitter, but I'm better on Instagram because I struggle with Twitter. Like, I'm so bad at it. But yeah, like, and if anyone has any questions about that I've said, yeah, that anyone can drop me a message there as well.
That's great. Oh well, thank you again so much for coming on, and I'll pop all of your links in the description, and I definitely encourage people to check you out because, as I say, you do massively advocate for everything BMS in healthcare, and I think you're a very interesting person to, you know, read about and speak to. So yeah, thank you very much for agreeing to come on.
Thank you very much.
And there we have it. There was my episode with Laura. I really hope that you enjoyed that and didn't gag too much during it. We were talking about some of the particularly disgusting topics that we covered. I really, really enjoyed talking to Laura. And as I said at the start of this episode, it was really nice to reminisce about some of my times in the PATH Labs. So yeah, I can only thank Laura again for coming on. And if you've got any questions, please feel free to follow her. Fire them away. I'm sure she'll be absolutely more than happy to answer them. And yeah, please let me know what you think. As always, the links will be in the description to either follow Laura, find out more about her online, or of course to get in touch with the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please, if you fancy it, think about maybe subscribing to the podcast, maybe even giving it a rating. That would really massively help me out. Feedback is always appreciated. And yeah, thank you so much. I will see you in a couple of weeks' time. And yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening. Bye.